Hey guys, welcome to Crime, the rest is history. Before moving on to today's episode, I would suggest everybody to listen to the disclaimer. So guys, today's episode is about the return of the Ripper. At 7:55 p.m. on Wednesday, 19th December 1888, Charles Ptolemy was making his way along England Row of Poplar High Street when he saw a woman in the company of two sailors by the entrance to Clerk's Yard on the opposite side of the High Street. One sailor was around 5'11" tall and, in Ptolemy's opinion, looked like a Yankee, and the other was about 5'7" tall. Charles later recalled that the shorter one was talking to the woman whom he later identified as Rose Millet when he was taken to view her body at the mortuary. Whistled, the taller of the two was walking up and down. So strange it did seem, he later told the Daily Chronicle, that I stopped and took an account of them. He then heard the woman say to the shorter sailor, "Now, now, no," and heard the shorter seaman speak to her in low tone. It struck me that they were there for no good purpose. He later recalled that that was the reason I took so much notice to their movements. I shall always remember their faces, and I could pick them out of a thousand. He also stressed that when he had seen her, Rose Millet seemed perfectly sober. At 2:30 a.m. on the morning of the 20th December, she was seen by Alice Graves in the company of two men outside the George Pub of Commercial Road by the time which she appeared quite drunk. Her body is found. Foul play not suspected. At 4:30 a.m., Police Sergeant Robert Godning and Police Constable Thomas Costello found her dead in the clerk's yard. Her body was still warm, suggesting that the death had occurred only a short time before. According to the later report by Metropolitan Police Commissioner James Monroe, "The face was perfectly balanced, the clothes were not disarranged, and around the neck was a handkerchief loosely folded, but not tied. In the pocket of the dress was a small pill empty. In one of the ears was an earring, and the other was missing. There were absolutely no signs whatever of any struggle, and no marks of violence invisible. The police believed from the appearance of the body that the case was one of the suicide or of a sudden death from natural causes." Assistant Divisional Police Surgeon Dr. James Harris was sent for an end having carried out a cursory examination of the body, in the course of which he found no marks, no signs of foul play. He pronounced life extinct and ordered that the body to be removed to the mortuary. Here, the mortuary keeper and coroner's assistant Curtin Teachless discovered a mark around her neck, which was approximately an eighth of an inch depth, with some scratches about it. Postmortem disagrees with the police. A postmortem was subsequently ordered and was duly carried out on 21st December 1888 by a divisional police surgeon, Dr. Matthew Brownfield. His findings, as it stated in his subsequent report and presented at the opening of the inquest into Rose Millet's death that was at the same day, were as follows. "Blood oozing out from nostrils, and there was a slight abrasion on the right side of the face. On the neck was a mark which had evidently been caused by a cord drawn tightly around the neck from the spine to the left ear. Such a mark would have been a four-thread cord. There were also impressions of the thumbs and middle and index fingers of some person plainly visible on each side of the neck. Death was due to strangulation. Deceased could not have been done it herself. Marks on her neck were probably caused by her trying to pull the cord off. The murderer must have stood at the left rear of the woman and, having the ends of the cord around his hands, thrown it around her throat, crossed his hands, and thus strangled her. Police embarrassment. At the end test, it transpired that the police were unaware of Brownfield's conclusion that Rose Millet had been murdered, and therefore, since they were still on the opinion that her death had been accidental, they had not actually launched an investigation. As Commissioner Monroe put it in his reports, the evidence was certainly a matter of surprise to the police, but expecting the medical evidence as correct, the case was clearly one of murder. Monroe confessed that he himself had been wrong-footed by the victim's perfectly placid features and by the absence of all signs of violence when the body was discovered. He therefore sought a second opinion and asked a surgeon, Mr. McCullough, to make a further examination. McCullough concurred with Bonsfield's finding that the death was the result of strangulation, leaving a somewhat nonplussed Commissioner Monroe to opine that there is therefore no doubt that the case was one of the murder, and murder at a strange and unusual type. Had the Jack Ryper returned? Inevitably, the question was soon being raised as to whether or not this new atrocity spelled the return of the Jack the Ripper. The police had, and the majority of the newspapers seemed to be, having been anxious to dispel any rumors that the murder of Jules Millet had been the work of Jack the Ripper. Indeed, there seems to have been a marked determination by the press to avoid the sensationalism that had caused so much panic and unrest in the wake of previous killings. The coroner, Winnie Brechters, was reported as stating at the inquest that the unusual signs of strangulation, such as protrusion of the tongue and clenching of the hands, were absent, there being nothing at all suggestive of death by violence. He did, however, point out that such signs were often not present in cases where the violence had been very sudden. The jury, faced with a large amount of medical testimony and evidence that pointed to the strangulation, returned to a verdict of murder by person or persons unknown. Reporting on the verdict, the Advertiser, reflecting the view held by several other newspapers that the area had enough of Whitechapel horrors, commented that it is unfortunate that there is a fundamental difference of opinion between the coroner and the jury. For months past, there has been a succession of abhorrent enormities forced upon public attention, and it would have been a great relief to have been assured that the death of Rose Millet Chings was due to accidental strangulation. As the matter stands, additionally, responsibility is thrown upon the Metropolitan Police, who from the first have contended that the death was attributable to natural causes. The truth may never be known with certainty until the adage that murder will out, if murder it be, it is once more justified. It is evident from this and the other reports on what was being dubbed the popular mystery that many newspapers were desperately trying to report responsibly on the murder in order to prevent further outbreaks of panic in the district. The Star newspaper stirs it up again. However, one newspaper in particular seemed to be determined to lay the blame for this latest apparent atrocity firmly at the Riper's door. On 24th December 1888, the Star, the newspaper whose early reporting had done so much to stir up the leather apron scar, broke ranks with the majority of other papers, and in an article that bore the transtasting headline, "Is he a thug? A starlight on the Whitechapel crimes, the rope before the knife," it complained that the town has supplanted so full of horrors that a mere murderer, unaccompanied by revolting mutilation, passes apparently for commonplace, and the discovery on the Thursday morning of a woman's dead body with the white mark of a strangler's cord around her throat had failed to create any excitement even in the neighborhood. Adopting the same chilling tone as it had its leather apron campaign, a tone designed to terrify the local residents, the article went on to opine that the shift and silent method of the thug is a new and terrifying feature in London crimes, and this murder investigated with a starlight significance by the discovery that it has possibly bearing upon the series of Whitechapel crimes. The suggestion is this: was the popular murder another of the series of Whitechapel and the work of the same man? If so, has the murder changed his methods, or is it not possible that the dead clerk's yard is a new revelation of his old methods, that in other cases, patrolly strangulation first of all resorted to, and that when the victims were by the means rendered helpless, the knives was used in such a manner as to obliterate the traces of the act? Was Rose Mellett a victim of Jack the Ripper? All of which leaves us with the question as to whether, as well as being a Whitechapel murderous victim, Rose Mellett was a victim of Jack the Ripper. The honest answer is that we don't and never will know for certain. The evidence would suggest that she wasn't, and the majority of the experts are in agreement that this is indeed the case. Indeed, notwithstanding the Star's attempt to link her death to the earlier victims of Jack the Ripper and their reporting their obvious fabrication of Dr. Phillips' opinion by citing a source close to him, her injuries simply weren't consistent with the mutilations that were by then all too familiar modus operandi of Jack the Ripper. Perhaps the last word should go to Dr. Robert Anderson, who, writing in his memories in 1910, stated emphatically that the Pollard case of December 1888 was death from natural causes, and but for the Jack the Ripper scare, no one would have thought of suggesting that it was a homicide. Evidently, over 20 years later, and it must be said, in the face of considerable evidence to the contrary, Addison clung rigidly to the belief that Rose Mallet was not only not a Ripper victim, but he also doubted that she had even been the victim of murder.